It's the middle of winter, and we're lost. My wife and I are looking for a place to get a drink on a late Sunday night in the middle of a neighborhood we do not know. Stoke Newington should have a good place to drink. It is London after all, but we keep passing darkened Turkish groceries and fried chicken shops. No pubs. All the restaurants are polishing cutlery and stacking chairs, readying to close. The map on our smartphones tells us there is a speakeasy near us. Over the last years, speakeasy-style bars in Shanghai, Buenos Aires, San Francisco, and Paris have opened to provide a nostalgic drinking experience where bow-tied bartenders enforce ridiculous house rules while old-timey swing music plays in the back. The proprietors use secret passwords and hidden entrances to keep bookings at a minimum and to add a level of cool exclusivity. The cocktails are dreadfully expensive, but they are tasty. When we arrive to the marker on the map, what stands in front of us does not look appealing. It is an imposing black door, like the entrance to a cheap student flat or a basement storage unit. There appears to be no sign of entrance or welcome. We scan the surroundings for a signal that there is in fact a place inside for a good drink and some interesting people watching. There is nothing. We laugh that we're on some CCTV and the host is watching us for the right code, or perhaps sizing us up to decide whether we're worthy. We wait in the cold, thin air, where streetlights cast yellow-stained shadows on an abandoned London high street in December. A couple of American tourists fretting over an unmarked door. If there is a speakeasy, we are forbidden to enter. The speakeasies of the 1920s were not this hard to find. If you were willing to go against the dry laws of Prohibition America, then you were pretty much welcome. In the shadows, underground bars served bootlegged gin and whiskey, mixed with honey and mint to mask the awful taste. Cocktails were born. Drinks like the Bee's Knees, Last Word, Sidecar, and Corpse Reviver. Once inside a stirring world of trap doors, underworld mob bosses, revolving bookcases, big band jazz, and mysterious cover-ups involving presidents and silent movie stars awaits. This is Secret Passages, a podcast about the stories found in hidden tunnels, subterranean networks, and other mysterious portals. I am E.S. Rodenbiker. The nation went dry with the 18th Amendment to the foundational document of American life, the Constitution. Winston Churchill called it an affront to the history of mankind. I'm sure he meant to include women in that statement, but of course it is Churchill, so maybe he didn't. Americans still wanted a drink, and the law was not going to stop them. Speakeasies popped up in back alleys, basements, and second-floor rooms across the United States, the wettest cities being Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Detroit, and New Orleans, ones near coastlines or the Canadian border. Before speakeasies, there were blind pigs, blind bulls, or blind tigers, the idea being a customer would enter a tavern and ask for a ticket to see the pig or bull or tiger being kept in the back room. For price of admission, they would receive a free mug of strong drink. Needless to say, there was never a reason to view the advertised animal in the back, since the drink was so good. Customers were happy to stay in the blind. The speak softly shops of Britain and Ireland in the early 1800s were smugglers' hangouts. the Mos Eisley Cantina of Georgian Britain, where you will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. The speakeasies of Prohibition were a place for mobsters like Lucky Luciano and Al Capone, Hollywood movie stars, congressmen, and musicians. They mixed with dock workers, bohemians, and the down and out. But ordinary people arrived in droves too. America liked to drink, and the forces that drove the temperance movement into dry laws across the country were more than just puritanical jurisdiction or fundamentalist fervor. It was common for Americans to have a glass of beer or cider with a meal, including breakfast. Water dredged from brown rivers was not safe for drinking, and at only 2% alcohol, the drinks did not noticeably disturb social life. But when much stronger distilled spirits proliferated with gin and whiskey, the result on home lives led to distressing levels of domestic abuse, child abandonment, and delinquency. In 1920, the 18th Amendment passed, fundamentally altering American life by making it against the law to consume alcohol, unless under medicinal or religious supervision. The only problem: if you want something to go away, about the worst way to go about it is to make it forbidden. The speakeasy shops, once reserved for thieving smugglers, transformed into secret speakeasies, which opened up for public enjoyment. Places like the Dill Pickle Club in a Chicago back alley beckoned writers like Carl Sandburg and the Gold Coast elite, with the phrase painted above the basement entrance: "Step high, stoop low, leave your dignity outside." The Cotton Club in Harlem brought out the beginnings of jazz, with Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, and Fats Waller. Originally owned by the boxer Jack Johnson, it was sold to the Leeds-born Owen the Killer Madden, a bootlegger and gangster, finding his way in a little place called America. Across the city at the El Fay Club, the silent movie star Texas Guinan held court every night with her bright blonde hair and thick Central Texas drawl, welcoming patrons with her signature, "Hello, sucker." At the back of Ratner's Kosher Dairy restaurant on Delancey, underworld bosses Bugsy Siegel and Lucky Luciano held meetings in the back rooms with secret exits and entrances, while potato pierogies and matzo balls went out the front door. The 21 Club on West 52nd took speakeasy secrecy to a new level. At the tip-off on an incoming police raid, the house bar could rotate like a bookshelf in a mystery story to disappear behind the wall. There were chutes designed to deliver the bottles down into the basement, where it was quickly tucked away in a hidden cellar connected to the building next door. They could honestly say, "No alcohol on these premises," when the untouchable Bureau of Prohibition agents interrogated. Down in the basement, all the G-men had to find to confiscate the bootlegged booze was a crack in the brick wall. The trick was to insert an 18-inch skewer into a small opening in the brick. A lock would release, and the false brick wall swung open, revealing the neighboring cellar. The folklore surrounding speakeasy hideaways and tunnels are not just for gangsters and bootleggers. There is a local legend about the sudden death of President Warren G. Harding at the Palace Hotel in San Francisco. Although Harding was found in his hotel room alongside his wife with an apparent heart attack, there are varying reports that he was seen across the street the night before at a speakeasy. The story goes that when the 57-year-old president collapsed in the company of another woman, the Secret Service transported the dying man through an underground tunnel connecting the Palace Hotel to the speakeasy. This allowed the president to die peacefully next to his devoted wife without any scandal. Now, this is an unconfirmed story, but after Harding's death, it was discovered that he was a capital womanizer and fathered a child with a woman in New York. So, no matter how far-fetched the tunnel story, the legend may still have some truth in it. My favorite speakeasy story is about a place called the Mystery Room. Out on a dusty road in the desert, the Arizona Biltmore has attracted the glamorous since its opening, hosting 13 US presidents, along with the rich and famous. Clark Gable was a regular. Room 1201 is now known as the Clark Gable Room. The songwriter Irving Berlin penned White Christmas while sitting poolside, baking under the Arizona sun, and casting his mind to the winters back east, where treetops glisten and children listen to sleigh bells in the snow. Wrigley took ownership of the hotel. Yes, that Wrigley, as in Wrigley Chewing Gum, Wrigley Field of the Chicago Cubs baseball team. He brought a bit of that Chicago speakeasy charm to the hotel. Up on the top floor, men tucked away through a swinging bookshelf to a hidden room they called the Mystery Room. Designated as such because wives and children were forbidden, and they were left guessing where the men had gone when not poolside or in their rooms. Behind a swinging bookshelf, the entrance to the Mystery Room opens up to reveal a smoking room with a hidden bar under a stained glass ceiling, a cathedral for cocktail pilgrims. The space is not large, not big enough for a full band, but maybe a small rhythm section and a horn. On nights when police cars barrel down the 6-mile dirt road approaching the Biltmore, a member of the hotel staff is strategically positioned at the beacon light atop the roof peak. Scanning the horizon like an air raid warden, they ring the alarm by directing the spotlight through the stained glass skylight. The flurry of kaleidoscopic colors fills the smoky Mystery Room, scattering the well-dressed men back to their rooms with awaiting unimpressed wives and snoring children. There is a secret passage out of the Mystery Room, leading directly into a nearby room. Room 1201, the Clark Gable Room. There is something appealing about being in a forbidden place, outside the bounds of the law, where people of many backgrounds and creeds gather for a common cause. An unintended consequence of prohibition allowed for people usually relegated to separate places to join together under the search for finding a strong drink. Women in polite society were not seen drinking in public, but the flappers of the era mixed with men, breaking the courting rules of family supervision, and just generally getting out of the house. They cut their hair in bobs and danced the foxtrot to Duke Ellington's big band, no longer forbidden to loosen up. The black and tan clubs crossed race lines by providing a place for black folk and newly arrived immigrants to mingle over music and strong liquor. If the rules were already being broken, they must have seen segregation as another rule easy to ignore. As the stock market crash brought on the Great Depression, it was time for some old laws to change. Mostly motivated by economic incentive, the ban on liquor eased. Since most Americans did not stop their alcohol consumption, the law changed, making it federally licensed and taxed. The 21st Amendment was added to the Constitution, negating the 18th, and restoring decency back to the history of mankind, as Churchill would say. After 1933, it was no longer forbidden to mix drinks in one place, but the rules for mixing people would take much longer. There we stood in front of the imposing unmarked door in Stoke Newington, looking at our smartphone map trying to find an exclusive cool nouveau speakeasy. We are outsiders, forbidden to enter. So we resign ourselves in search of a drink somewhere else. Dejected, freezing, and desperate, we plead with a waiter at a restaurant further down the street to let us sit in for a drink while they clean up. He rolls his eyes, seeing that the other customers, the real customers, are just about to wrap up. He agrees and allows us entrance. We sit by the window looking out on the empty street. We order glasses of wine and warm ourselves in exasperated silence, trying to enjoy the rest of the night. If only this place had a small rhythm section with a horn and a sidecar or last word or corpse reviver on the menu. It could really liven things up. Secret Passages is researched, written, and produced by me, E.S. Rodenbiker. New episodes are every 2 weeks. If you like what you hear, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. It truly helps. And subscribe on Spotify or Apple. You can get in contact with me at secretpassagespodcast.com or follow along with the latest updates on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. If you have a secret passage story to tell, please let me know, and I may even include it in a future episode. Thanks for listening, and see you on the other side.